welcome to our broadcast. Our topic is returning to the workforce after a long absence. And you know, if you are facing this hurdle, I hope you will gain new confidence and some concrete steps to take, which will help you land that very best position. This is certainly a difficult topic. It is not one of our favorites, but it is important for anyone that is facing this trauma and anxiety of getting back plugged in and not starting at rock bottom. To help me discuss this topic, I am joined by a special co-host, George Dutch, out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, George.
Hello, John. I'm happy to be joining you once again.
Yes, it's good to have you, and as you and I agreed in preparation for this show, this is going to be a very intriguing and enlightening discussion. George has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992, and that's over 20 years of professional experience. His career transition company is entitled Job Joy. He hosts his own weekly radio show entitled The Career Connection. George also does consulting for Fortune 500 companies. He works with all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. George has authored two publications, Job Joy and also Job Boot Camp. For the first 30 minutes of our show, George and I will talk about our topic, returning to the workforce after a long absence. And then we'll take a short break and begin to answer your job hunting questions. So, George, let's jump in and talk about helping our listeners return to the workforce after a long absence. And as we get started, I think it's important that we define what do we mean by an absence. So where we're talking about something 1 year or more, where our listener is experiencing some significant fear, perhaps paralyzing fear, that might hinder making those employer calls, almost like I'm feeling very overwhelmed and defensive and hindered by this long gap, and I don't know where to begin. Is anybody going to listen to me? So, George, I'm delighted you and I have developed some very important tips and procedures to overcome this. And as a matter of another part of introduction, some of these gaps in employment history are nothing more than just time out due to illness, or probably one of the most common is time out because mom wanted to raise a family, and now that the family has moved out, wants to get plugged back in, but doesn't want to start from receptionist. Or a person has chosen to take an extended vacation. You do hear about these travel tips or these travel ventures sailing around the world. Well, that takes more than a year to do that. We also have the very common individual that has been a victim of a recent divorce and now needs to get back to work in something more than minimum wage. And then the last group are those that are re-emerging society after incarceration or in some kind of disciplinary activity, and they are wanting something more than just a survival job. So with all that definition, George, did I catch the audience, anything you want to add to defining the audience and defining the topic?
No, I think that was an excellent definition, John. I think anybody that's been in our business for 20 years or so is going to encounter each one of those situations several times. They're quite typical.
Yes, they're typical, and we do want to admit right up front that this is not a blink your eye and click the button and move on. This is not a simple matter of some magic on the resume. This requires some serious rolling up the sleeves and facing it with integrity and honesty. And let's go to our first, probably most important of the items that we want to discuss, and that is the job hunter needs to acknowledge that this is not a normal thing and that fear or anxiety is typical. And rather than fighting it off and saying, I'm bigger than this, that would not be a good approach. But to realize, yes, this is a serious item. I do need to pay attention. I don't want to lose my place in the workforce because of this gap, so that I have to take three steps backward to maybe earn my way back in 5-10 years down the road. So an important part of this is addressing the emotions that are fueling the fear and anxiety, and not discounting them. George, you and I talked about this. Anything more you wanted to add, George, on this important acknowledgement that this is key? It is not for the faint of heart. It is for the serious person that wants to get their act together and move on in life. But they need to meet the pain and the fear head on.
Yes, I think the pain and the fear, the anxiety, they would undermine anybody's confidence, even the best of us. You know, people with a lot of achievements in life, people with a lot of pride, people with a lot of, normally, under normal circumstances, would have a lot of confidence. The fact that they've been out of the workforce for some time undermines our confidence, undermines our a belief that we can overcome this problem or this challenge. And it's for anybody, it needs to be met face on. But I think one of the first things they need to do is stop being so preoccupied with their situation, with their circumstances. Yes, they are terrible circumstances to be in. They're negative. But by focusing on your circumstances, you're forgetting an essential part of the job search, which is what really counts is the person who has the power to hire you. You need to focus on them and less on yourself, and focus on the needs and priorities of the people that have the power to hire you. Because your skills haven't disappeared, your experiences haven't disappeared, you still have a lot to offer. It might not feel like that while you're suffering with anxiety and pain and fear, but the reality is there's lots of room in the world for you to invest your skills, your experience, your interests. The world is waiting for that. And the less you focus on your negative circumstances, and the more you focus, you know, in terms of realistic hope, focus on finding the niche, finding the person that's going to recognize and reward you, the sooner you will be launched into action.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And since you brought up the employer, I do think it's important that we just touch on what is the employer really thinking about? How are they perceiving this issue of a gap? And in trying to get behind that, you and I consult with employers. We train employers on how to screen job applicants. So we have a pretty good insight on this. And I think I'll give my two cents, George, and then you jump in. But I think the most issue that an employer has with this is what is the risk, the downside, because unless there is something offered by the candidate, the employer is assuming that there may be a pattern here that's going to occur again. This person may be bored with work. They've got a bad work ethic. Maybe they got a medical condition that's going to reoccur. Maybe they really enjoyed being out of the workforce, but now financially they have to go back to work for a while. And so probably the biggest nail to pound home is why are you going to be productive and long-term? This was an unusual occurrence in the past. It is not going to happen again. Any other thoughts, George, you have about looking at this from the employer's point of view?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it on the head that the employer views anybody, whether they're disadvantaged or not, as a potential risk. It's hiring is a risk assessment exercise in that sense. They don't know you, so at some level they fear you. And they fear a lot of things that could undermine the viability, the security of their business, let alone their careers, the reputation, their career status, et cetera. So there's a lot of unknown factors that play into any hiring situation, and the fact that you've been out of work for a year or more only adds to that risk that needs to be assessed. But it can be assessed in rational, logical terms, and you need to help the employer make that risk assessment.
Yeah, and I think we're beginning to suggest kind of our main theme here as you and I prepared for this show is the antidote is a familiar relationship that builds some type of trust with the employer so that the employer does not feel encumbered or at risk with this this gap. They trust you enough, they feel comfortable with you enough that they're willing to give it a shot. So the key antidote is you need a relationship with the hiring person, that manager, that president, in order to overcome the gap, in order to assume the position that you have been accustomed to providing in past years. Now, very quickly, we want to say what we're not advocating here is a career change at the same time that you're trying to overcome this gap. That is a whole separate topic, making a career change. And if you're trying to make a career change and you're trying to overcome a gap, you're compounding the difficulty in the job search. So our suggestion to you is try to re-enter the workforce in the last position you had where you have the most experience, get your feet back on the ground. Then if you want to make a career change, do so from a position of strength, meaning that you're in a position, you've established yourself, and it's time for you to move ahead. The thing that we are also being very strong in our advice is applying for vacancies online is not going to cut it because you have no relationship with the employer. You are being compared with the workforce that has prior experience. And we'll pick this up after the break.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose.
Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's the starting point, Avid.
Okay. Well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
And we're picking up with our broadcast talking today about how to re-enter the workforce after a long extended gap. And we've been emphasizing the importance that we need to address this in a very sober, mature manner. This is not some small item of erasing a few words on your resume and polishing it up or changing your elevator speech. This is serious, and your fears and anxieties need to be acknowledged. They're normal, and we need to take some very positive steps, which we are going to be introducing in just a few minutes. One of the things that George Dutch and I are in agreement about is avoiding applying for vacancies online, because there is no relational bond that occurs in an application process. So you're already starting on the wrong foot. You're running a race barefoot, so to speak, and there's very slim chance. I just had a client this week who started off in her job search, and within the first week, she found the dream opportunity. And she put all her eggs in the basket, and it turns out that they hired somebody else. And she was so devastated by that, she has just totally thrown out that particular career goal. And, well, if they're going to treat me that way, and so on and so on. And we just can't be doing that. We need to be thinking in terms of developing relationships of people that care about us and know about us that can open up opportunities. So, George, do you have any more comments about the futility of applying online at this stage of the game?
I think this is where the gap becomes a real disadvantage, because employers tend to look at resumes in order to hire people that are currently doing the same kind of job that they're looking to fill, or are performing job duties currently that are very similar to the core job duties in their job description. So this is where the gap is a real disadvantage. You're not currently doing that. You haven't been doing it for a year or more. That just raises the risk level to an intolerable level for most employers.
Yeah, and the disappointment, I mean, how many times can you handle a rejection before you start feeling like a worm? Let's not go there. There's a better way to do it. So, George, let's move to where we're going to give some positive steps to get over this hurdle. And the first of three steps that you and I developed here is to have a honest explanation crafted as to why there is a gap, what happened and why. And it's got to be sober and honest, not a lot of snow or fluff. And more than that, once you have wordsmithed this explanation out, prepare to meet with a couple of close friends. Just ask them to listen so you can verbalize it. Don't let them interrupt you. When you're done sharing your statement, then they can pause and give you some comments. But you not only have to wordsmith it out, but you have to say it. And you have to say it enough times so it becomes second nature. You can say it at a doctor's office in the waiting room. You can say it in line at the grocery store. You can say it when you're waiting for the bus. Any casual place, it just can roll right out. George, give me some more pointers on this explanation about why the gap exists.
Yes, when I'm helping my clients craft such a statement, I try to help them make it as economical as possible. Keep it short. It should be truthful, as you said. It's always best to tell the truth. It's how much of the truth you need to tell to satisfy an employer that's the real issue. And what surprises most of my clients is how little satisfies most employers, because it's precious few people in this life that haven't suffered some major misfortune, even tragedy, or known people, you know, close to them that have suffered some major misfortune. So if you're truthful and authentic about your statement about how you landed in this position or why you're in this position, most employers will take it at face value. And if they have any doubts about it or any misgivings, they can always check with a few references anyways. But that happens rarely in my experience.
Yes, and, you know, I'm recalling as we're talking a situation where an individual had a significant gap of about 3 years, and what it involved was incarceration due to drug and alcohol abuse. And so as I was coaching him and advising him, I said, you know, you have chosen to come clean. You have been clean for 6 months, and you are ready to rejoin the workforce. And he was applying for a position in for a large city government in landscape and yard maintenance. And I said, my suggestion is that you say to the hiring person right up front, I've just come out of a return to work program because I was incarcerated for drug and alcohol abuse. And I want to let you know that I've been clean for 6 months and I'm asking you for a chance to prove myself. And if I don't work out, we'll both know in 90 days whether I am up to it to meet your expectations. Then no questions asked. You can let me go. You don't have to fire me. Well, he got hired. And as a matter of fact, I don't think it took more than two interviews and he got hired. And it worked like a charm. So that's about as extreme a negative situation. For those that are returning from a medical disability through your back out, or perhaps there was a injury, a stroke, the issue the employer is going to be concerned about is something going to happen at the workforce that's going to put the employer in jeopardy, having to pay for a lifetime of medication and medical leave. And so you've got to get the doctor's document of some type to say that so-and-so has been rehabilitated and they are able to work and shouldn't lift more than 30 pounds or whatever that is. Any more thoughts on this statement or explanation, George, before we go to the next point?
Yes, I would encourage people to enhance the positive about their gap time. For example, I had a client that I worked with last year that had been a stay-at-home mom for 17 years. And I coached her to prepare a statement that acknowledged how much she enjoyed being a stay-at-home mom. She was now seeking a position as a project manager. So what we did is we crafted all kinds of examples of projects that she managed while she was a stay-at-home mom. And you can imagine the enthusiasm, you know, the positive energy that came out of her when she talked about these wonderful projects that she had managed as a stay-at-home mom, at the same time demonstrating her ability to manage such projects for employers in the real world of work.
Yeah, and I think you're bringing up an excellent point here, is that you were doing something during that gap, and we need to redeem that. We need to use that time, even though you weren't paid, you weren't employed, we need to redeem that to show, for lack of a minimum, it would be character, self-discipline, being responsible, carrying things through, getting it done, overcoming barriers, maintaining good relationships, resolving conflicts, being a team player, all of those important worker value or worker trait issues are huge, and they aren't directly related to one or the other particular job. They're just positive work traits. So let's go to the next step here. The listener needs to develop a list of good, we're calling these goodwill network contacts, so that these individuals feel a sense of support. They're reaching out. They're in the candidate's corner. They want the individual to succeed. You mentioned, George, strong references. It's very important. But every person has at least 10 individuals who they've known for years, and there needs to be a very personal, and I recommend it's face-to-face. George, or Frank, I'm returning to the workforce. I'm having to overcome this huge gap in my employment that you're aware of, and I just wondered if you've got some individuals in this type of company, in this type of nonprofit, that I could contact where I can start a relationship and bypass this the stereotype this gap tends to elicit on the part of employers. And so that goodwill referral network is huge. This avoids cold calling. You're warm calling. Certainly, if you have friends who are employers, then that becomes a huge advantage, that they would be willing to give you a chance to get your feet back in the race. So, George, any more you wanted to add to that, getting that referral network going?
I just want to say that returning to work is challenging, and it's not something that you should feel you have to do alone. You know, you exist in relationship with other people. Now is the time to draw on the goodwill of those relationships that you have with other people. People in your circle of family and friends, don't neglect them. The average American knows about 250 people, so each one of your friends and family and relatives and acquaintances knows at least 250 people. Imagine the reach that that represents across your city or across your region in terms of work profiles. So you have tremendous access to opportunities just by telling your friends and family or the 250 people in your goodwill network exactly what you're looking for.
Yes. And in addition to that, if you are a college graduate, there are companies and organizations to contact. We'll pick this up after the break, George.
Okay.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us two basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like, something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options.
90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast, talking about overcoming the hurdles to returning to the workforce after a long absence. And my special guest today is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio on our website. George, just before the break, we were wrapping up a second important step in overcoming this gap, and that was to develop a list of goodwill network contacts. And we were mentioning that we want at least 10 individuals who have a vested interest in the goodwill, the future, the success of the job seeker. All of us have individuals that care about us, and it's time now to call in your chips and ask for assistance. I was just mentioning before the break that another place that's very valuable is organizations that hire graduating seniors from one's college. So if you're a college graduate, you want to contact the placement office and find out companies and nonprofits that like your campus and therefore would be open to you contacting them to discuss future possibilities, not vacancies, but future possibilities. With those two items of positive steps, let's go to the third, and that is to get your feet in the water and start making progress towards the finish line. We recommend enrolling in a community college two-unit class. You can even enroll as an audit so you can save on the enrollment fee. This class should be something that is within the profession that you are pursuing. And then instead of job hunting, you begin hunting for a field experience to complement the text and the classroom lectures. So you're going to contact employers asking for a field experience, that's a hands-on learning opportunity, to supplement what you're learning in the classroom. Now, this field experience would be about 3 months, 10 to 15 hours a week. It's going to get you immediately into the workforce, and you're going to start learning some very valuable insights and tips. You want to be working for the individual that hopefully someday would be your boss, that title, that position, that's who you approach for the field experience. Now, there's no guarantee that that individual is going to hire you, but there is a guarantee that you're going to gain valuable experience, you're getting back into the workforce, but this individual is going to have contacts. And so if a position does not evolve in that particular organization, you will get a handful of strong referrals where you can then begin your networking to discuss future possibilities. So this, I think, is probably the simplest and easiest way to overcome this gap, dodge the bullet of having to explain and be defensive and apologetic about your gap. You're taking a very positive step. And in a way, on a feeling level, you're feeling good. You're getting up to go do something almost every day, and it's a positive thing. George, any more thoughts on that before we start dipping into our job seeker questions?
Yes, I think many people are naturally suited to going back to school. They enjoy learning. They enjoy being in a learning environment. Other people don't. They would find going back to school very stressful. And for those people, they might think of another alternative, volunteering for some organization, using skills that they enjoy using. They might get involved with a church or a temple or a synagogue. The point is to get in relationship with other people. Get involved with other people doing something, mixing and matching your skills and interests towards a common goal with them, but somehow interact with people. That's the key. And talk to them.
And it's the relationship that is going to give the benefit of the doubt. It's not going to be a beefed-up resume or a hot cover letter. That is just not going to work. Well, George, I think we've really done justice to this topic. Let's turn to some of these job seeker questions. Have you got one for us there?
I do. Here, I think, is a very typical one from Anne in Washington, D.C. She says her kids are growing, and I would like a job where I can set my own hours and visit my grandchildren occasionally. So she's returning back to the workforce. We're not sure how long, but she'd like to find that kind of a job.
Okay. Well, first thing we want to say to Anne is there is no list of jobs that you can take so that you have time off for the grandkids. And so that type of work, and we're assuming Anne wants a challenging position that's commensurate with her experience and knowledge and years in the workforce. So my suggestion is Anne apply for positions that are listed as full-time. And then once she gets the offer, she asks, is there some flexibility in the work schedule? Is there a way that I could do this in a telecommute way? What are the provisions for taking time off to be with family? The time not to ask for all those special concessions is during the interview process, or even before applying for it, because the employer is always going to say no. But if the employer really likes you, that means you've got an offer, then the employer is more inclined to work something out. And, you know, they can just say no, and that's that. So that that would be there. Now, there are types of positions that are more conducive to job sharing or doing part-time, but there isn't, in a sense, a list. I'm sure, George, somebody has written a book, Excellent Part-Time Jobs, and that would be a really nice topic to Google. The problem is we can't ensure that these part-time jobs fit a person's past experience. So why don't you take a shot at this and see any other thoughts to help Anne here with this question?
Sure. I think if Anne's priority is to set her own hours and be master of her own time, then she's really looking at some form of self-employment. And she can work, she can be self-employed, but still work under the umbrella of an organization. For example, she could work as some kind of financial services advisor, or she could work as an insurance broker in real estate, you know, where you can set a lot of your own hours, but at the same time, you've got the support of an organizational structure around you. And I think one of the best sources for Ann to check out is the Association of American Retired Persons, the AARP. They have an excellent website, and they've got lots of suggestions there for people who are in Ann's situation that want some time flexibility and still want to bring in some income and visit their grandchildren.
Yes, and AARP really has been very proactive about assisting in that area. I've been very impressed with the emphasis they've put on it. Good. Well, I think we've done that one. Some justice. How about another one, George?
Okay, let's move on to Jamie in Pennsylvania. He was teaching overseas, and he got sick, very sick. And the doctors had told him some time ago that his recovery will take up to 5 years, and he's now on Social Security. But he needs to get back into the workforce. He's been out of the workforce for over a year now, so he wants to know, how can I get a job?
Well, that's certainly what we've been talking about. Step one, Jamie has to reinstate what his former occupation was, which was teaching. And he has to get some kind of a statement letter from his doctor that indicates his ability to return to the workforce, because the employer is going to be nervous that this problem that occurred in the past, illness, is going to reoccur. And that employer then is going to be stuck with this pre-existing condition. The other thing that might be positive is to start gaining the certification to do part-time substitute teaching as a way to, in a sense, gradually re-enter the workforce. And we're assuming here that teaching is the right and the best thing.
No, we can't assume that. John, can I just interrupt? We can't assume that because he was in real estate for 5 years before he went overseas teaching.
Ah, okay. Well, I was going to say that one area where there's a lot of teaching going on that is not managed by certificates is assisting immigrants and refugees with simple things like relocation and learning English as a second language, how to negotiate a rental arrangement for apartment, those types of basic kind of things. They're all teacher-related. They're usually classes that are going on. There are classes at the Y for all a whole range of topics. So I think it would be good to demonstrate that he's back in the workforce and start on a part-time basis to build up to full-time and then get that letter from the doctor. What are your thoughts, George?
Well, I was thinking he might be able to combine his teaching experience with his real estate knowledge and perhaps look at an opportunity. And this is perhaps a chance for him to develop a proposal for, let's say, a real estate association where part of their mandate is to educate new brokers, because there's a lot of turnover in that industry.
Yes. Okay, we'll pick this up after.
Hello, this is Evan Newman back for a final two-minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hardwiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft-wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft-wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your hardwired, your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs.
I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning software traits?
Yes, Evan. Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills and choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
We're back to the final quarter of our show, and our topic has been returning to the workforce. My special guest today is Counselor George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada, and George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. George, we're at that place where we're answering questions regarding career seeker issues, and I'm just trying to recall, do you think we responded to the last one, and should we go on, or are there a few other items to add there?
No, I think we can move on. Why don't we move on to a very typical return-to-work situation? As you know, people are retiring younger, and they're living longer. And after a year or two or three of retirement, they start to think that they'd like to get back in the game. They'd like to be working again because they got energized by work, and they're not feeling as motivated by retirement. So Bill from Alaska, for example, had a pharmacy, and he wants to get back into the workplace, not doing anything related to pharmacy. In fact, if he had his druthers, his preferences, he would prefer to work in international medical disaster and relief. We also have Will in Tennessee, who was a golf club manager for over 25 years. And after a short retirement, he's ready to get back in the workforce and do something different. What would you recommend to these two gentlemen, to Will in Tennessee and Bill in Alaska? How could they get started in returning to the workforce after retiring from so many years in a very clearly defined career, taking a few years off in retirement? How should they get started?
Yeah, excellent, because boomers are in the millions now, and they're retiring by the truckload. So, number one, whatever path these individuals choose, there has to be a very common sense, logical reason for doing that, that they need to process themselves so that they can explain to an employer. And if these two individuals are going to go into something different, there has to be good, solid reason for doing that, rather than I just woke up this morning with a good feeling and when I opened the paper, there it was, development director for the local hospital. You know, that isn't going to work. So usually there's a two-pronged reason that's valid, and that is a heart passion. Ever since I can remember, I've always had a passion for animals, and that is why I'm so motivated about what the good people are doing at the Humane Society. And my past work experience has developed skills in. So it's the passion for and the skill set. We talked in the past about two different skill sets. You have occupational skills that have been part of one's job, and then you have innate talent that is part of one's nature. And usually there should be a complement there, but there are going to be additional skills that are not in both camps. The stronger a candidate is when their innate talent complements their past occupational skills. That means it's transferable to a new area. So the person needs to have a clear story, and the second thing is they do need to have a target. I'm going to pursue all agencies that have to do with protecting and advancing the cause of animal preservation, and I'm seeking the position of administrator, development director, field manager, etc. So those would be two critical steps for these individuals. George, fill in what I left out.
Well, if we can go back to Bill's specific story, Bill in Alaska, who has sold his pharmacy, but he would like a post-retirement job in international medical disaster and relief. On the face of it, there seems to be a connection, because international medical disaster and relief, I'm sure, includes the administering of certain pharmaceuticals or drugs for pain relief, for infections, all kinds of illnesses that you would encounter, problems you would encounter in a disaster. So Bill, as you said, would need to identify the dozens of organizations, nonprofit organizations, and government-sponsored organizations that operate in that specialized world of international medical disaster and relief. And he would need to then identify, put together, as you said, a short list of his 10 to 20 preferred possible employer, and then become very systematic and deliberate and intentional about approaching them, identifying key decision makers in the organization that might have the power to hire him, doing his best to approach them or get face-to-face with them, at least establish some rapport with them, start a dialogue with them, and do research, figure out where he can add value, because they're going to be open to a proposal if he can demonstrate clearly how he can add value. Similarly,
yeah.
With Will in Tennessee, he was a golf club manager, and he's thinking that he might like to do some fundraising with a college or a university. Well, as he says, he knows a lot of people in the area, because as a golf club manager, he met many, many people over 25 years. He's probably very sociable. He finds it easy to converse with people from all levels of society. and he probably has some basic skills that are required for fundraisers. Those that he lacks, he could quickly pick up through some kind of certification program to become a certified fundraiser. And then, again, it's a question of identifying the colleges and university in his region and approaching their current gifts and donations departments and, again, striking up relationships and building up a business case for how he could add value to those organizations on a part-time
basis. As you and I are talking about, Will, golf clubs tend to attract senior executives. And if he's been in that business as a manager for 25 years, he probably knows all the senior decision makers in that community. 25 years is a long time. And, you know, a golf club is a place you go for recreation. It's a fun, upbeat place. And usually the members return, and so there's some well-honed and developed relationships. Well, I would think that a college department director for development would be very impressed that Will could get an appointment with easily 100 of the most influential and key executives in the community just on a phone call. To me, that would be strength enough to begin negotiating some type of employment position, because in fundraising, it's all about relationships. Just getting back, though, to the gentleman in
Alaska.
Bill, yeah. International medical disaster tends to require a significant number of volunteers, particularly in the warehouse, soliciting donations and putting them in storage. And so one thing Bill can do right away is get plugged in as a volunteer, just so he is known by the organization, and then go from there. I think we're out of time, George. Thank you. Thank you for a very stimulating broadcast.
And so that wraps up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600, whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.